What car did Ted sell? A Mercedes-Benz. Then what did he drive? He used a truck from work. Did you see it? Every day for 2 years. What was it? A pickup. A Chevy, I think. An old brown Silverado? Plain steel wheels? The guy stared. How did you know that? One more question, Reacher said. For your wife. She looked at him. After Oline went to the cops, did she tell you who it was she talked to? Was it a detective called Emerson? The woman was already shaking her head. I told Oline if she didn't want to call, she should go to the station house, but she said it was too far because she never got that long of a lunch hour. She said she'd go to the DA instead. His office is much closer to the DMV, and Oline was like that anyway. She preferred to go straight to the top, so she took it to Alex Roden himself. Helen Roden was completely silent on the drive back to town, so silent she quivered and vibrated and shook with it. Her lips were clamped, and her cheeks were sucked in, and her eyes were wide open. Her silence made it impossible for Reacher or Yanny to speak. She drove like a robot, competently, not fast, not slow, displaying a mechanical compliance with lane markers and stoplights and yield signs. She parked on the apron below Franklin's office and left the motor running and said, "You two go on ahead. I just can't do this." And Yanny got out and walked over to the staircase. Reacher stayed in the car and leaned forward over the seat. "It'll be okay."
"It won't."
"Helen, pull the keys and get your ass upstairs. You're an officer of the court and you got a client in trouble." Then he opened his door and climbed out of the car, and by the time he had walked around the trunk, she was waiting for him at the foot of the stairs. Franklin was in front of his computer, as always. He told Reacher that cash was on his way up from Kentucky. No questions asked. Told him that Ted Archer hadn't shown up anywhere else in the databases. Then he noticed the silence and the tension. "What's up?" "We're one step away," Reacher said. "Ted Archer was in the concrete business, and he was frozen out of all these new city construction contracts by a competitor who was offering bribes. He tried to prove it, and must have been getting very close to succeeding, because the competitor offed him."
"Can you prove that?"
"Only by inference. We'll never find his body without digging up First Street again. But I know where his truck is. It's in Jeb Oliver's barn."
"Why there?"
"They used Oliver for things they can't do themselves, for when they don't want to show their faces, or for when they can't. Presumably Archer knew them and wouldn't have gone near them, but Oliver was just a local kid. Maybe he staged a flat tire or hitched a ride. Archer would have walked right into it. Then the bad guys hid the body, and Oliver hid the truck."
"Oline Archer didn't suspect anything?"
"She did eventually. She sat on it 2 months, and then presumably she pieced together enough to make some kind of sense out of it. Then she started to go public with it, and all kinds of private alarm bells must have gone off, because a week later she was dead. Staged the way it was, because to have a missing husband and then a murdered wife 2 months later would have raised too many flags. But as long as it looked random, it was going to be seen as coincidental."
"Who had Oline taken it to? Emerson?"
Reacher said nothing.
"She took it to my father," Helen Roden said.
There was silence for a long moment.
So, what now?" Franklin said.
"You need to hit that keyboard again," Reacher said. "Whoever got the city contracts has pretty much defined himself as the bad guy here, so we need to know who he is and where he's based."
"Public record."
"So check it." Franklin turned away in the silence and started his fingers pattering over the keys. He pointed and clicked for a minute. Then he came up with the answer.
"Specialized Services of Indiana. They own all the current city contracts for cement, concrete, and crushed stone. Many, many millions of dollars."
"Where are they?"
"That was the good news."
"What's the bad?"
"There's no paperwork. They're a trust registered in Bermuda. They don't have to file anything."
"What kind of a system is that?" Franklin didn't answer.
"A Bermuda trust needs a local lawyer."
Helen's voice was low, quiet, resigned. Reacher recalled the plate outside A.A. Roden's office, the name
followed by the letters that denoted the law degree. Franklin clicked his way through two more screens.
There's a phone number. That's all we've got.
What is it? Helen asked. Franklin read it out. That's not my father's number.
Franklin clicked his way into a reverse directory, typed in the number, and the screen changed and gave him a name and a business address.
John Mistroff.
Russian name, Reacher said.
I guess so. Do you know him?
Vaguely. He's a wills and trusts guy, one-man band. I've never worked for him.
Reacher checked his watch.
Can you find a home address?
Franklin went into a regular directory, typed in the name, and came up with a domestic listing.
Should I call him?
Reacher shook his head.
We'll pay him a visit. Face-to-face works better when time is short.
Vladimir made his way down to the ground-floor surveillance room. Sokolov was in a rolling chair in front of the long table that carried the four television monitors. From left to right, they were labeled North, East, South, and West, which made sense if a person viewed the world from a clockwise perspective. Sokolov was scooting his chair slowly down the line, examining each picture, moving on, returning from west to north with a powerful push off the wall. All four screens were misty and green because it was dark outside and the thermal imaging had kicked in. Occasionally, a bright dot could be seen moving fast in the distance. An animal, nocturnal, fox, skunk, raccoon, or a pet cat or a lost dog far from home. The north monitor showed a glow from the crushing plant. It would fade as the idle machines cooled. Apart from that, all the backgrounds were a deep olive color, because there was nothing out there except for miles of fields constantly misted with cold water from the always-turning irrigation booms. Vladimir pulled up a second wheeled chair and sat down on Sokolov's left. He would watch north and east. Sokolov would concentrate on the south and west. That way, they each had responsibility for one likely direction and one unlikely. It was a fair distribution of labor. Upstairs in the third-floor hallway, Chenko loaded his own supermatch. 10 rounds, Lake City 308s. One thing Americans did right was ammunition. He opened all the bedroom doors to speed his access north, south, east, or west as required. He walked to a window and turned his nightscope on, set it for 75 yards. He figured he would get the call when the soldier was about 150 yards out. That was about the practical limit for the cameras. He would step to the right window and acquire the target when it was still more than 100 yards distant. He would track its progress. He would let it come to him. When it was 75 yards out, he would kill it. He raised the rifle, checked the image. It was bright and clear. He watched a fox cross the open ground east to west.
Good hunting, my little friend.
He walked back to the hallway and propped the gun against the wall and sat down in a straight-backed chair to wait. Helen Roden insisted on staying behind in Franklin's office, so Reacher and Yanni went out alone in the Mustang. The streets were dark and quiet. Yanni drove. She knew her way around. The address they were looking for was a loft building carved out of an old warehouse halfway between the river wharf and the railhead. Yanni said it was a part of the new urban strategy. Soho comes to the heartland. She said she had thought about buying in the same building. Then she said,
"We should put Helen on suicide watch."
"She'll be okay," Reacher said.
"You think?"
"I'm pretty sure."
"What if it was your old man?"
Reacher didn't answer that. Yanni slowed as the bulk of a large brick building loomed through the darkness.
"You can ask first," Reacher said. "If he doesn't answer, I'll ask second."
"He'll answer,"
Yanni said.
"They all answer."
But John Mistroff didn't. He was a thin guy of about 45. He was dressed like a post-divorce midlife crisis victim. Acid-rinsed, too-tight jeans, black t-shirt, no shoes. They found him all alone in a big white loft apartment eating Chinese food from paper cartons. Initially, he was very pleased to see Ann Yanni. Maybe hanging out with celebrities was a part of the lifestyle glamour that the new development had promised. But his early enthusiasm faded fast. It disappeared completely when Yanni ran through her suspicions and then insisted on knowing the names behind the trust.
I can't tell you. Surely you understand there are confidentiality issues here. Surely you understand that.
I understand that serious crimes have been committed, Yanni said. That's what I understand. And you need to understand that, too. You need to choose up sides, right now, fast, before this thing goes public.
No comment.
There's no downside here, Yanni said gently. These names we want, they'll all be in jail tomorrow. No comebacks.
No comment.
You want to go down with them? Like an accessory, or do you want to get out from under? It's your choice, but one way or the other, you're going to be on the news tomorrow night. Either doing the perp walk, or standing there looking good like, oh my God, I had no idea. I was only too happy to help. No comment. Loud, clear, and smug. Yanni gave up, shrugged, and glanced at Reacher. Reacher checked his watch. Time ticking away. He stepped up close.
You got medical insurance?
The guy nodded.
Dental plan?
The guy nodded again. Reacher hit him in the mouth. Right-handed, short swing, hard blow.
Get that fixed.
The guy rocked back a step and doubled over, and then came up coughing with blood all over his chin. Cut lips, loose teeth all rimed with red.
Names. Now. Or I'll take you apart a piece at a time.
The guy hesitated. Mistake. Reacher hit him again. Then the guy came up with names. 6 of them. And descriptions, and an address, all from a position flat on the floor and all in a voice thick and bubbly with mouthfuls of blood. Reacher glanced at Yanni. They all answer. In the dark, in the Mustang on the way back, Ann Yanni said,
He'll call and warn them.
He won't. He just betrayed them. So my guess is he'll be going on a long vacation tomorrow.
You hope?
Doesn't matter anyway. They already know I'm coming for them. Another warning wouldn't make a difference.
You have a very direct style, one they didn't mention in Journalism 101.
I could teach you. It's about surprise, really. If you can surprise them, you don't have to hit them very hard.